Okay, so this is obviously a very unusual Thanksgiving, but here's the good news, Max and Stephen A. We still have First Take. Happy Thanksgiving, y'all. And we still have football. And listen to this, Mr. Smith, we still have your Cowboys. And that's exactly where I want to start, fellas. Let's dive right into it because we got a couple games on deck here. So it's the Cowboys versus Washington. Now, Dallas is in a three-way tie for second with the Giants and today's opponent, Stephen A. Smith. Is it time to finally admit that Dallas is actually the best team in the NFC East?
Well, I just want to make sure that I let the national audience know that clearly the team here on First Take have absolutely no love for me whatsoever because it's Thanksgiving. And obviously, that's the first question that I'm being asked. And obviously, I have to admit that the answer is yes. So much to my chagrin, I have to look at the Dallas Cowboy faithful out there and say, as pathetic, as moribund, as horrible as you are this season, with all the bad luck that'll put a black cat to shame, the bottom line is you're still the best team in the NFC East. And it's really, really by default. The New York Giants are a team that has a bright future, but they have no Saquon Barkley and a quarterback that can't hold on to the football in Daniel Jones. So you wash them away. You look at the Washington football team, they don't even have a name for crying out loud. Okay, we know that they're pretty much null and void. Their quarterbacks are out for the season. We wish Alex Smith nothing but the best. It's a miracle just to see him in that starting lineup. In the case of the Philadelphia Eagles, we've lamented how horrendous their situation has been. Carson Wentz, about 18 turnovers, has been sacked. Lord knows how many times, get knocked upside of the head over 40 times. This dude is all over the place right now. It's been a horrible season for him, and we understand how bad things have been for the Philadelphia Eagles. So by virtual default, even without the presence of a Dak Prescott, even with Ezekiel Elliott having only one 100-yard rushing game on this entire season, which just occurred last week, the Dallas Cowboys by default are the best team in the NFC East, unfortunately.
No, first of all, no one's trying to hear that from you. You have the nerve to come out here on Thanksgiving of all days, where the Cowboys are on the slate every single year. Stephen A. Smith talking about the most nauseating fans ever, the Dallas Cowboy fans. No matter what, they will let you down. Are you actually sitting here today saying that the Cowboys, you, are saying the Cowboys are the best team in the NFC least? You are saying the Cowboys? Am I getting this right?
Yes. Yes, because the conference is the NFC least. It ain't even the NFC East. So it's actually apropos that they're the best team in the worst conference in the history of football. The NFC least has the Cowboys as the best team. I see that as very reasonable.
Look, none of them are any good. But if I had to choose the best team right now, I'd say the New York Football Giants. They're trending in the right direction. Their defense is looking good. Their offensive line, at least, is not as horrible as it was a couple of years ago. They're the only team in the division with a young ascending quarterback who's on the field right now. He's ascending slowly, but he is ascending. If I had to say who's playing the best quarterback right now in the NFC East, you make me say it in the NFC least, I'll say Daniel Jones. And in fact, if you look at the way, yes, the Cowboys have that nice win against the Vikings, they're trending in the right direction, but so are the Giants. The Giants lost to the Cowboys by a field goal a bunch of weeks ago already. They lost a narrow game to the Eagles. They come right back. They beat Washington twice. They lost to the Bucs, Stephen A., by less than a field goal. It was a two-point loss to the Tampa Bay Bucs, who a lot of people still like to get out of the NFC. And then they just beat up on the Eagles. They beat them by two scores. They're the team trending in the right direction. They're the team with the defense. They're the team with the ascending quarterback. If you make me pick in this division, I'll take the Giants over the Cowboys right now.
Well, first of all, here's where I think your argument is wrong. First of all, you talk about trending. Trending doesn't mean you have arrived. Trending means that you're going in a proper direction, but you haven't. You're not there yet. That's number one. Number two, by the time they get there, Dak Prescott will probably be back, which means, as a result, the Dallas Cowboys will have a quarterback that plays better than Daniel Jones. Number three, Saquon Barkley, again, is not there. What we have to applaud about the Giants is the fact that Joe Judge appears to be the right coach. David Gettleman and the Giants brass clearly have picked the right coach, where we don't know that about Mike McCarthy and the Dallas Cowboys. He doesn't seem to be the right coach for them. But they still have Ezekiel Elliott. They still have a CeeDee Lamb. They still have an Amari Cooper. They still have a decent offensive line. Their defense is horrid. They're dead last in the league in points allowed. They're dead last in terms of touchdowns against the pass with their passing defense. They're definitely dead last. We get all of that. But their offense is so potent that the New York Giants can only hope such a thing for them. And that's where I'm at with it. I think that it's plausible that the Dallas Cowboys are the better team right now, regardless of how the Giants are trending. Until they get there, we can't sit up there and say they're better than the Cowboys.
I mean, they just ran through the NFC East pretty good, with the exception of the Cowboys, who they haven't played very recently. They just beat Washington twice and the Eagles. I mean, and by the way, as I said, came close. They really probably should have beaten the Bucs. That, to me, that's more impressive, I think, than actually beating the Vikings. But you talk about the Dallas offensive line being decent. No, it's not. Not anymore. Not really. The identity of Dallas and the reason we think of them the way we've thought of them in recent years has been the offensive line. They didn't just put a second-round pick in for an offensive third. They spent 4 out of 5 seasons drafting an offensive lineman in the first round. And that was the key to Ezekiel Elliott, as we're now seeing. And everything else, it was their old line. That's not there anymore. It's gone. And that's not returning, not the way it was. So those Giants, the way you think of them, Cowboys, the way you think of them offensively is gone, right? But the Giants do have a new coach. You mentioned it yourself. And Joe Judge is doing a good job so far. And he has coached them up. And the defense is coming to get you. No, look, we're talking about 3-7 teams right now. We're not, you know, we're splitting hairs among bottom feeders. But among those bottom feeders, the Giants, right now, you make me pick, they're better than the Cowboys. And furthermore, at least the Giants are my team. You're talking about the Cowboys? We're splitting hairs, and there's not a dime's worth of difference, and your nickel goes to the Cowboys?
Well, I think it's important that you remember how I started off the show. I lamented the fact that I had to even broach this subject. I didn't want to talk about the Cowboys, particularly on Thanksgiving. You're talking to an individual that doesn't believe the Dallas Cowboys have earned the right to play on Thanksgiving. I don't think they deserve it. I don't think the Detroit Lions deserve it. But that's a subject that we'll get into a little bit later on in the show. But I think it's important to remember that you sit up there and you want to give yourself a pat on the back and a round of applause, because guess what? The Giants beat the Eagles and the Redskins. The Redskins are playing their third string quarterback. Now, we know that Alex Smith is not a third stringer when he's healthy. But that nasty leg injury that he suffered a couple of years or more than a year and a half ago, we didn't know if he'd ever play football again. So we applauded the fact that he was just on the football field playing. Dwayne Haskins is out. Kyle Allen is out. You look at Antonio Gibson. He's had one 100-yard rushing game this season. Rushed for 128 yards. Actually, a very stellar performance. Who was that one game against? The Dallas Cowboys. And that was the game the Washington football team won 25-3 because the Dallas Cowboys elected not to show up. In the end, the Dallas Cowboys on the offensive side of the ball has talent, and they have more talent than anybody in the NFC least, as you so eloquently stated, regardless of their problems on the defensive side of the ball. And I think because of that, as of right now, with the specter of Dak Prescott coming back eventually, we all hope and pray. I think the Dallas Cowboys, unfortunately, are still the best team in the NFC least, because if one team was going to challenge them, it was supposed to be Carson Wentz and the Eagles. And we know how horrible they've been. Nobody's documented that more than you, Max.
All right, let's go there right now. Speaking of the Eagles, so they are in first place, fellas. I know this is a bit misleading because we're talking about the NFC least. They haven't lived up to expectations, just 3 wins on the season. Carson Wentz has been an absolute shell of himself. And yesterday, Coach Doug Peterson was asked about his QB. Listen up.
One of the things that I've learned as a player and I've seen as a coach is that the tough decisions have to be made in this business, whether it's a tough decision to move on from a player in the offseason or the decision now to whether you're going to make the move at quarterback or not.
You're not making that move, right, Doug, to a different quarterback?
Not today on Wednesday, no.
Okay, possibly for Monday?
I'm focused right now on getting better today. I mean, okay. We're looking – I don't know. I mean, I would say no.
Carson's your starter for Monday?
Yes.
Max, Thanksgiving's a feel-good holiday. Happens to be my favorite, but I'm forced to ask the difficult questions here on this show called First Take. Should Philly bench Carson?
They should have benched him you know, a month ago or 3 weeks ago when I first brought it up. It doesn't matter anymore, just to hold him accountable. I don't think it matters anymore. But the bigger thing for me is that was shocking sound from the presser, I think. I don't think Doug Peterson has the power to bench him unilaterally. I don't think he can make that decision. And he was asked the other day, does he have the autonomy to do it? And he avoided the question, right? He was evasive. He didn't answer it directly. So it felt to me at this presser like he came out and either someone, like he got a message that he's supposed to send that, yes, he can make the decision. And either he feels like I really can't, or he's been told explicitly he can't. That's how it sounds to me. I mean, he came out there first and said, he starts talking about organizational changes, moving on from a quarterback. And then he moves on to, as of now, Wednesday. This was yesterday. As of Wednesday, he's the starter. Wednesday? Well, hold up. Is he going to be the starter on Monday? And he equivocates. And finally, he squeaks out a yes. Listen to this again. Listen to the end part again.
You're not making that move, right, Doug, to a different quarterback?
Not today on Wednesday, no.
Okay, possibly for Monday?
I'm focused right now on getting better today. I mean, okay. We're looking, I don't know. I mean, I would say no.
Carson's your starter for Monday?
Yes.
Say it with your chest, coach. Say it with your chest. Carson, your starter on Monday? Yes. Mike Tomlin, we ask him that question. Yes, this guy's starter. Peterson, yeah. That is a guy, Stephen A., who sounds to me like he does not have the autonomy to bench the quarterback. And that sounds like a coach who's thinking about his job, who's scared for his job, who doesn't know if he has the power to do what he needs to do as a coach.
I think you're reaching. And the reason why I think you're reaching, Max, is because of a couple of things. I'm going to defer to a quote that Doug Peterson made. I don't need to call it up or whatever because I think the audience would rather hear me speak than him. But I will tell you this. He did say, quote, you know, in terms of Carson Wentz, he said, "We are conceding to losing." I'm paraphrasing here. He said, basically, you're throwing away the season. Max, that is an indictment against Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts has thrown two professional passes in the National Football League. Jalen Hurts was at the University of Alabama playing in a national championship game and had one of the most horrendous first half performances that we had seen. He got benched for Tua Tagovailoa, and that obviously put Tua on the map because he ultimately brought Alabama back and they won a national championship against Georgia. We understand that. He had to transfer to Oklahoma, and even though he had a stellar season, primarily it's due to his running ability because when you watch him throw the football, it's been a challenge. You can't replace Carson Wentz with a dude that struggled to throw the football in college and has only two professional quarterback throws in the National Football League. Eventually, I think that Jalen Hurts is a stud athlete, so eventually I think he'll improve his throwing ability, and as a result, he'll get his opportunity. But it certainly can't be now, and that's really what this is about, which brings me back to Peterson. You got Miles Sanders. You got Boston Scott. These dudes run the football exceptionally well. They have been running the football effectively. Why not run the football more and throw less? You've got an offensive line that clearly can run block. Both of them are averaging at least 4.8 yards a carry. Why not do that? You look at some of the weapons that they have, whether it's Fulgham, whether it's Rager, whether it's Goddard, who's back now. You've got weapons. So the bottom line is, why has Carson Wentz regressed over the last 3 years? If Doug Peterson's a bit nervous, maybe he should be nervous. Maybe he should be looking in the mirror. Because how does Carson Wentz come back from that nasty injury where he was 11-2 4 years ago, Max, before going down, and Nick Foles steps in and wins them a Super Bowl? The next year you come back, you go 5-6 in your 11 starts, but you're completing about 68-69% of your passes. And from that point, you've plummeted 63%. Now you're down to 58%. You have regressed under Doug Peterson. So maybe, just maybe, we should be looking at Doug Peterson a little bit more and asking him, since your defense stinks, since you've had some injuries, since you have a running game that you've ignored with no viable reason to ignore, since you've done all of those things, why are we not looking at the quarterback? Why are you not looking at the coach, I'm sorry, as opposed to Carson Wentz? That's all I'm saying.
Because, look, first of all, the Jalen Hurts point. Stephen A., I say this every time this subject comes up. Hurts, right, like Howie Roseman, if he thought Hurts could be the quarterback of the future, God bless him, right? Even in college, it was unclear whether Hurts could be a quarterback at the next level. And maybe we're finding out, no, or at least the early returns don't look good. This is not about the Eagles giving themselves the best chance to win that week. This was about saving their franchise. Mm-hmm. This is about putting their franchise quarterback on the right track. What did Carson Wentz say a couple weeks ago after he threw interceptions and they lost? This is the way we do things around here. He wasn't held accountable. This is all about holding Carson Wentz accountable. I actually think it's probably too late to do that. You know, everyone making excuses for him at the end of last year, telling him he's playing so great. He didn't do any soul searching in the offseason, right? He thought he was so great. He was reading his press clippings. Everyone was talking about, I was thinking, no, this is going in the wrong direction. And he needed to be working on some stuff. And this year also, the message he's received is, this is just the way we do things around here. You got, when Donovan McNabb, how often have I brought up Donovan McNabb, right? He was paid money. He was expected to make up for deficiencies. In 09, he was benched. I want to say it was against Baltimore, right? He was sat down. And that he even admitted later that season, that sparked a run. And they wound up in the NFC Championship game because they benched McNabb. They held him accountable, and he had to look in the mirror. And they got better. Carson Wentz needs to be. It's not about winning that Sunday. It's about the rest of his career and the rest of this contract he has with the Eagles, Stephen A. Doesn't matter if Jalen Hurts is a good enough replacement.
Simple question. When Donovan McNabb was quarterback in the Philadelphia Eagles, who was the owner? It was Jeffrey Lurie.
The owner of the Eagles in 09? Go ahead.
Yes. That's right. So my response, it was a rhetorical question in that sense. What I'm trying to say, Max, is the real question to you is, why would Jeffrey Lurie in ownership for the Philadelphia Eagles have a problem holding Carson Wentz accountable when they held Donovan McNabb accountable? Do you have an answer to that question?
Stephen A., I don't. I will say that sometimes certain quarterbacks and certain owners have certain relationships. We saw with Tom Brady and Bob Kraft. Tom Brady did an end around
That's
the greatest
answer.
Coach of all time, and Bill Belichick. You bring up Jerry Jones and Tony Romo. What I see and what I hear is Jeffrey Lurie and Carson Wentz are good to the point that guys are scared. And when you hear things, whatever, and you hear it from a couple different places, but when I hear a coach barely able to squeak out a yes, first he avoids the question, he's evasive, then finally it sounds like he got the memo, hey, tell everyone this is your choice, but he doesn't do it with his chest. He's like eating the words before they come out of his mouth, right? And he says no, and he equivocates, and finally he squeaks out a yes that he has the power to do it. Do you believe him? You believe he has the power to do it?
See, here's my thing. Joe Banna was in the position that Howie Roseman is in now. So, to me, here's the answer. Here's the answer that I'm looking for that I don't have. I'm looking for this answer. Is it true that management elected to give Carson Wentz the contract that he has, usurping the authority of Doug Peterson? Because, see, if Doug Peterson didn't want him, then it all makes sense what you're saying. But if Doug Peterson was right there with them when it came to investing this money in Carson Wentz and making him the future of your franchise, then maybe Doug Peterson is scared himself, Max, because he knows that he went upstairs and fought for Carson Wentz to be that guy.
Could be.
And now you got to find a way to make it work.
Yeah.
Those are two different scenarios.
No, you know what? That may be. But he looks scared to me. He looks evasive and scared to me. That may be. It may be that he vouched for Carson Wentz. But he looks scared to me.
Listen, it may also be this. Carson leads the NFL in sacks taken. I realize that off-target throws and also interceptions. But at the end of the day, it appears he lost his confidence because we know he can do it. He's done it before. And maybe they don't think it is the right move to bench him. And they don't think Jalen Hurts is the answer. So this is the predicament that they're in.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Shopping for Mother's Day is always a challenge because you wait until the last minute. But Macy's Gift Finder makes it incredibly fast and easy to find the right gift just in time for Mother's Day, whether you're shopping for your sister's first Mother's Day or your fashionista mom who loves to make a statement. Macy's Gift Finder has so many great gift ideas that you can easily pick out something special to celebrate them both. You can shop by price, anywhere from $25 and under to $100 and under. You can also sort by categories like fragrance, handbags, and more. Or gift lists, like for the mom who has everything. Pre-wrapped gifts or gifts for grandma. Find top brands like Studio Pro Model Beats headphones, Polaroid cameras, Samsung smart TVs. So what are you waiting for? Mother's Day's May 12th, and it'll be here before you know it. Macy's has the perfect gift guide to make picking something for mom easy this year. Head to Macy's.com/giftfinder today. That's Macy's.com/giftfinder. Thanks so much for listening to the pod and have a fabulous day. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's lectricebikes.com. Thanksgiving's primetime game, Ravens-Steelers, has been moved to Sunday following a COVID-19 outbreak among the Ravens. A source told ESPN that Baltimore had additional positive tests yesterday. Meanwhile, this is the second time the Steelers' schedule has been affected by COVID-19. Their game against the Titans was moved as well. This time, they lose their mini bye week with the Thanksgiving game being moved to this Sunday. Players not happy. Juju Smith-Schuster tweeting this. First, the NFL takes away our bye week because another team can't get their COVID situation together. Now they take away our Thanksgiving primetime game for the same reason. Shaking my head. Eric Ebron tweeting, not going to lie, NFL, this is bull. And Chase Claypool adds, what a joke. Max Kellerman, the undefeated Steelers, their schedule's moved around again. Tell me this, is this a big deal for this team? Could it affect them in the long term?
It's a very big deal for the Steelers and the NFL, by the way. Look, there's no two ways about this. This is an undefeated team in week 12. I know it's COVID. This is COVID. Everyone has to make compromises. I get it. We all get it. Steelers don't have to be happy about the fact that the other teams are getting COVID, even if they're being careful. But still, hey, the Steelers are like, we're good. We're ready to play. We keep getting moved. They lose their bye. Now they lose their mini bye, right? And they're an undefeated team in week 12. Like, by this time in the season, were all the Dolphins set 1972 games significant? If one got postponed, by this time in the season, 07 Patriots, are they significant? Yeah, I mean, you could say, hey, the Giants, the year they lost to the Ravens in the Super Bowl were 10-0, and those games turned out weren't that significant, but you didn't know that at the time. This is an undefeated team in week 12. Now, they faced a soft schedule, but we keep sleeping on the Steelers. People don't believe in the Steelers. Stephen A., right now they need that bye. You know why they need the bye or the mini bye right now? It's not just Baltimore, which is a tough game. It's the Colts and the Bills coming up. You got the Bills and the Colts coming. This is the tough part of your schedule, and you've been playing all these consecutive weeks without rest. So you have that. You have the league losing an undefeated team ready to go in week 12. By the way, you lose the rivalry game, by far the best game on Thanksgiving in primetime. Yeah, it's a big deal.
First of all, a couple of things just for correction. It's not your fault. You probably don't have the schedule in front of you. I do. After this Ravens game, the Steelers play the Washington football team. It's not the Colts and the Buffalo Bills. It's the Washington football team, which one could easily argue is a bye week or pretty damn close to it. And not quite a bye week because Washington's on the
Colts. Oh, I didn't mean.
They're not the Jacksonville Jaguars. They're not the Jacksonville Jaguars. Say what?
I didn't mean. Yeah. Stephen A., I didn't mean. I'm sorry. I didn't mean their next two consecutive games. I mean, that's coming up on the schedule now. It's a tough part of their schedule. Sorry. Yeah.
Got you. Understood. No big deal. No big deal. But here's the deal. It's not a big deal. They need to stop. Listen, I love my Steelers, but they need to stop whining. And I'm certainly not accusing Mike Tomlin because he doesn't do that. You know, he's a man and he handles the circumstances that are placed before him. And the players need to do the same. They need to stop all this stuff. First of all, I got news for you. They did have a bye week. It was week four. They played the Houston Texans in week three on September 27th. They didn't play week four, and then their next game was the Philadelphia Eagles on October 11th. So what's the problem? You did, and I understand it's not as early in the season as opposed to late, but you did have a bye week, so stop acting like you didn't. That's number one. Number two, you're 10-0. Number three, you got a 38-year-old quarterback that's playing like an MVP. So I'm sorry, you were looking forward to playing Thursday so you could get 10 days off as opposed to playing this Sunday where you're only going to get 6 to 7 days off. Get the hell over it. I'm getting really sick and tired of NFL players complaining about stuff like that. Now, if you want to complain about the players, if you think somebody on Baltimore was irresponsible, I got all of that. I totally understand it. If you find out guys were out partying or whatever the case may be, remember when Cam Newton came down with COVID-19, he was actually going out. I think he was hanging out with Stephon Gilmore or whatever, and something had happened. But the point is that unless we have evidence that that's what happened with the Baltimore Ravens, then you just never know. Max, we go on a plane, we spray in seats and all of this other stuff. We step in the cars, Ubers, or anything like that. I'm just talking about the average American person. The bottom line is you're spraying stuff, you're washing your hands, you're wearing your mask, you're doing all of these things. Why are they saying this stuff? Because stuff can remain on surfaces. Stuff could be airborne. You might be absolutely positively innocent of doing anything and still come down with COVID. The NFL is doing the best it can under these circumstances. The players had every opportunity to put themselves in a bubble kind of atmosphere. They refused to do so. So as a result, to some degree, even though the NFL is trying to be somewhat restrictive and really bring down a hammer on you, the reality is that some of the conditions simply cannot be controlled. People got to put forth their due diligence to make sure that they eradicate any circumstances that may lead to the postponement of games. Some are more successful than others. The Ravens ain't the first team that find themselves in this situation, and they will not be the last. The Steelers to react this way, it's BS, the NFL, et cetera, et cetera. Why are you pointing the finger at somebody when you can walk around next week doing absolutely nothing wrong and you could end up with COVID based on all the information that has been given to us about the potential of it being airborne, stuck on surfaces, and things of that nature? It can't be controlled. And so we understand that, which is why there's such an elevated level of urgency, which you, Max, have spoken so eloquently about over the last few months, because of how dangerous the situation is and all the things that we have to deal with. For them to come down on the NFL like that, to come down on a respective team when you might not even know the details as to how they contracted the virus, I just think it's a bit insensitive. We are dealing with a once in a generation global pandemic, once in a century, for crying out loud. We're all learning as we go along. And unless you have evidence that the Baltimore Ravens were out partying, being irresponsible, engaging in stuff that they had no business engaging in, you shouldn't be coming down with them like on them like this. You should be praying that all of them are okay and well enough to continue a football season.
Well, I think that was important to say, and I'm glad you said it, and I think it's true. But it doesn't change the fact that the Steelers might have feelings about it, right? But I think it's true. But the question is, this is a big deal. It's a very big deal. What you said can be true, and it's a big deal. I will say it again. People don't believe in this Steelers team, but they are undefeated. And the bye week in week four really hurt them. The tough part of their schedule is coming up now, and the reason you don't get a bye that early is because you don't need it yet. You need it as the wear and tear of the season continues, and you need that little break. They didn't get it, but they were supposed to have a little mini break, and they didn't get that. And they were supposed to have a primetime game, and they didn't get that. And whatever you want to say, because you're right, Stephen A., you can be very careful and still get the disease. But there have been voices in the NFL that said, hey, personal responsibility. And you could exercise excellent personal responsibility, right? You can be personally responsible and still get it. But from the Steelers' point of view, they're like, yeah, but we don't have it. But now that's two times that another team has. And our schedule keeps getting moved because of it. So I understand why they're upset, whether it's fair or not, or that's just for them. But I understand the feeling. And it's a big deal, especially with coming up. You're right, Washington's coming up. The defense has been playing better, by the way. But the Colts and the Bills, you circle those two games on the calendar and you go, those are the two games outside of this Ravens game that maybe could upset the apple cart here in terms of a perfect season. But you know what? They're going to get that little rest first. No, they're not. No, they're not. What if this winds up a one-loss team and it's a you know, within a field goal against a team like the Bills or the Colts? We're going to look back at that and say, what if? But the point is, even as a story for the NFL, it's a big deal. You think during a global pandemic, all the bad news we've had, that one of the most storied franchises in football, like when you think of old school, original team, smash mouth kind of football, like you think of Green Bay and stuff like that, or the frozen tundra, you think of the Steelers and the steel curtain and that whole tradition. Like, the Steelers are as synonymous with the NFL as any team. How about that team going undefeated? Would that be a big deal? It'd be a huge deal. And it just got harder.
You're accustomed to playing on every Sunday. You'll be playing every Sunday instead of a Thursday night game. Whoop-dee-damn-do. The real people who suffer outside of, I'm talking about health issues with the Baltimore Ravens, are us. Because instead of looking forward to a smash-mouth, very competitive, respectable football game on a Thursday night for Thanksgiving with the Steelers
Amen. And
the Ravens, we are stuck watching the Detroit Lions and the Dallas Cowboys. I don't know. I mean, that.
Oh, come on, Stephen A. This is already kind of a depressing Thanksgiving
for me. The only game you're really looking forward to today.
Oh, my goodness.
By the way, who's starting? Is it Richie Cunningham? I'm sorry. Who's starting? Is it Richie Cunningham? I mean, Andy Dalton? Or is it Ben DiNucci?
Rich.
I mean, who's starting today?
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture X Card. Earn unlimited 2X miles in everything you buy and turn everyday purchases into extraordinary trips. Plus, receive premium travel benefits like access to over 1,300 airport lounges and a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. Unlock a whole new world of travel with a Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Our matinee game is the Lions versus the Texans in Detroit. The Lions are 4-6. The Texans just 3-7. But let's focus on the Lions head coach, Matt Patricia, who is 13-28-1 up to 10 games through his third season as head coach of the Lions. Now, since hiring Patricia as head coach back in 2018, the Lions ranked 27th in win percentage by comparison when Jim Caldwell led Detroit to the NFL's 12th best record in two playoff appearances before Patricia took his place. We know he's from that Belichick coaching tree. Max, let me ask you this. Do you think the Lions need to apologize for hiring Matt Patricia at this point?
Well, sure, but the real thing they need to do is apologize to Jim Caldwell, because he was doing what they needed him to do. He was winning 9 games a season on average in 4 seasons. By the way, an African-American head coach who was fired because 9 wins wasn't enough, because 2 playoff appearances in 4 years for a team that hasn't won they've won 1 playoff game in 60 years. It is the least talked about record of futility in sports. 1 playoff win in 60 years. And this coach comes in 4 seasons, he gets you to playoffs half the time. Now, no, you don't win any playoff games, but you know what? You know how you start winning playoff games? Keep getting to the playoffs. You'll start to win some playoff games. He averaged 9 wins a season, 2 playoff appearances in 4 years, African-American coach. Fired. Let go, because 9 wins wasn't enough. They bring in a coach that's not African-American. By the way, Stephen A., that's possible. You can have a black coach and you could have a white coach who's a better fit or a better coach and you can hire him, but that's not the case, is it? They've gotten much worse. They didn't just get a little worse. They lost, what, 12, 13 games last year? They got much worse. So, yeah, you fire a guy after four measly seasons for succeeding for a franchise that never does? Ah, you could apologize to the fan base for hiring Matt Patricia if you want to, but apologize for Jim Caldwell for letting a successful coach go.
Here's where it's not a matter of disagreeing, Max. Here's what I would tell you. I think that you're being entirely too soft and too kind. I don't think they owe Jim Caldwell an apology. I think they owe the city of Detroit, Michigan, the state of Michigan, the National Football League, and the American public an apology for being the Detroit Lions. They have been systematically pathetic on every level, and it has spanned decades. Do you understand that the Detroit Lions haven't been relevant since Barry Sanders was running the football for them? That's how bad they have been. I mean, obviously, Calvin Johnson, Megatron, had to retire, and we hope that he'll end up in the Hall of Fame because he was that much of a big-time stud. But even back then, they weren't winning any playoff games. We know that Matthew Stafford is not a scrub. He's had more comeback wins than a lot of quarterbacks in the National Football League. But somehow, some way, playing for the Detroit Lions contaminates you. You're Matt Patricia. You're like 13-27-1 as the head coach. You've been absolutely horrendous. He should have been lost the job. He should have been brought back this year as the head coach of the franchise because we know they weren't going in a forward direction. And then when you look at the pipeline, certainly Jim Caldwell should not have been fired. We understand that, particularly considering what Matt Patricia has done. My attitude is, though, if you're going to let go of Jim Caldwell, why not let him go because you want a more offensive-minded coach and a guy like Eric Bieniemy, who's number one on everybody's list in terms of being on a hot list to be a head coach in the National Football League. This man spearheaded the number one offense, but even before Patrick Mahomes was wreaking havoc for the Kansas City Chiefs, he had Alex Smith as his quarterback. They weren't scrubs. So I look at Eric Bieniemy and what he's bringing to the table right now and what he's brought to the table the last few years. I think about Jim Caldwell again, along with a slew of other coaches, and I think a lot of it is worth consideration. Unfortunately, you're the Detroit Lions. You have been historically bad with your decision makings. So you could bring up that point about Jim Caldwell, and I'm in no position to disagree because obviously Jim Caldwell compared to Matt Patricia is really no comparison. It's an insult. But in the end, whether it's the Pittsburgh Steelers finding the Mike Tomlins of the world, whether it's the Green Bay Packers finding the Matt LaFleurs of the world, you can go into the coordinator ranks. Or you can simply look at somebody who happens to be an African-American and very elite at what he's been doing in Kansas City with Eric Bieniemy, kill two birds with one stone and go that route. Detroit doesn't know what to do. They don't know what they've been doing. They've been a national embarrassment. And once again, here we are watching them, forced to watch them on Thanksgiving Day at noon because obviously it's the only football game that's taking place and we love our football. So they get our attention by default when they've done absolutely positively nothing to be worthy of it or to deserve it. It's pretty damn sad. It ain't about Caldwell, though. It's about their organization and what they have historically been.
I think it...
Max, can I jump in?
I think
in
it is
quickly,
about Caldwell. Like, I understand why...
Go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. Go ahead, Molly.
I was just going to say, you can add to Caldwell if you want to, but I wanted to talk about Matthew Stafford because you have praised him before. He is a solid quarterback. Do you think at this point they've wasted his career and he should just demand a trade?
Yeah, sure. Matthew Stafford, if I were him, I'd want to get out of there. I think Stafford looked like he had top five talent. I don't think his career has played out that way. I've never considered him a top five quarterback. So maybe we just misjudged the overall package of Matthew Stafford. However, we see, as Stephen A. said, two of the greats that we've ever seen, like maybe the best back you've ever seen if you're, you know, under 60 years old, in Barry Sanders retires at 30, and Calvin Johnson, an all-time great, at 30. Both probably have something to do with the fact they're in a situation where you're not going to win, you don't have a lot of hope, and it's a tough game to play under those circumstances, right? Maybe it would have worked out a little differently, and their careers wouldn't have been wasted in that way. Had they, and maybe the same thing happened to Stafford, though I think he's shown he's not Calvin Johnson or Barry Sanders for his position. But I want to say something about Caldwell, Stephen A. It's one thing to be Marvin Lewis, right? We talk about African-American coaches, how hard it is to get the job, and then you got to keep it, right? Marvin Lewis, you were right. You're like, it's not that he's bad. It's that you've had a long time to win, and you have not been able to win in the playoffs. This dude, Caldwell, had the job for four seasons. He got to two playoff games. No, he didn't win any. But guess what? If you get to 2-4, I'm going to say you're going to get to 4-8, and I'll bet you you'll win one of those. There's a franchise that never wins in the playoffs. And so I understand the impulse to get, oh, Belichick tree, Belichick coaching tree. Let's grab Patricia, even though the Belichick coaching tree until recently hasn't seemed to work out so well in the NFL. But that temptation got them to let go of the only winning coach in recent memory for that franchise. And the reason was 9 wins isn't good enough. 9 wins looks pretty good now to that franchise, I think.
Well, 9 wins wasn't good enough for him because obviously they don't feel that way about everybody because Matt Patricia still wouldn't be there being 13-27-1. All right, that's number one. But number two, and more importantly, Max, the Detroit Lions haven't won a playoff game since 1991. They've been to the postseason 8 times. So that's doubly bad. Not only have you not won a playoff game since 1991, but it's nearly 30 years and you've made the playoffs 8 times. That would mean you've missed it 22. That is systemic. That is historical. That is horrible. It is who they are. And I don't understand how the National Football League has those boys playing on Thanksgiving Day. I don't understand how. I understand without Caldwell, it wasn't that way with Caldwell. But I don't understand how they're playing on every Thanksgiving. Why? For what?
We'll get into that.
I mean, do you really? Don't y'all know we wait until after the Detroit Lions games to eat our turkey? Don't y'all know that? Who eats before?
Yeah, we're gonna get into that.
The Lions game or around the Lions game. Nobody does that. Nobody does that.
I don't like Motown slander, but
we're going to appetite.
Yeah, I'll wrap up this segment by saying this. Happy Thanksgiving to all my family in Detroit I won't get to see this year. Long-time suffering Lions fans, and I know many of them aren't happy with what the Pistons did in the draft either, but that subject is for another day, y'all.